Parsha this week, Parsha's Vayera, dedicated in memory of Margalit Bas Rav Eliyahu, and the Shomer Shavu Aliyah. So the Parsha Vayera, and so it's typically described as the Parsha of Hachnasas Orchim, of welcoming guests and having guests and tending to them, because we have in the Parsha two episodes of Hachnasas Orchim, of having guests. The first one is, of course, is when the angels come and they are guys disguised as Bedouin travelers. They're traveling and they're coming to the tent of Avram and Sarah, and Avram sees them as Bedouin travelers. And even though he's in the midst of his discomfort and pain after his bris milah, it doesn't stop him from his enthusiasm to want to be machnis orchim and have guests into his tent. And he runs and he takes care of them. And that goes down in history as one of the great stories of hachnasas orchim in the Chumash. And the other story, of course, is with Lot in the parasha as well. Lot, the nephew of Avram, who also learned from his ways and from his good ways. We learned about him last week, about how, despite the fact that he had some negative characteristics and character traits, he also was a tzaddik as well. He's described as a tzaddik as well. And he, follows in his footsteps, of Avram, who he learned from, a disciple of Avram, of having guests as well. And the story is, when the same angels that came to visit Avram, disguised as Bedouins, they were really coming to perform various different agencies of Hashem. One is to inform Avram that he was going to have a child the following year. And the other mission they had was then to go to Sodom afterwards and then bring about the destruction of Sodom because of their morality. And that's where Lot was living with his family in Sodom. So they travel to Sodom after they visit with Avram, and they get to Sodom. And while they're there, so they are guests as well. They come in and Lot welcomes them in, and he wants to provide for them, provide food for them. But with him, the story with his Hachnas Zorchen goes awry a little bit, as we know, because the practice of having guests is not such a praiseworthy thing in Sodom. It's not a very a praiseworthy kind of activity to have guests in Sodom. And when the people in Sodom found out that Lot was welcoming guests into his home, so a whole bunch of thugs come around to the house, to Lot's house, and they want to basically beat him up and take out the guests and do things, terrible things to these guests. And when he tries to defend them, so then they even try to get him and they try and pull him out, at which point the angels, the angels, they perform their power, and they make miraculous phenomena happen to these thugs around the house, make them blind, and then they quickly tell Lot and his family, you've got to get out of here because we're going to be destroying the whole of Sodom. And they grab them and they run out and they say, it's the urgency is so great that they have to leave very quickly. And they say to Lot and his family, don't look behind, don't look back at the destruction of Sodom. Don't look back. But Lot's wife does look behind her. She looks back and looks at the destruction of Sodom, which takes place. And that because she violated that commandment to look back and watch and see the destruction of Sodom, what happened to her? She turned into a pillar of salt. She was punished and she was turned into a pillar of salt. And I don't know if there's any evidence or knowledge of where this pillar of salt is today, but suddenly it's in the area of the Dead Sea. And that whole area became very barren and very, filled with salt. So that's where it all took place. That's where Sodom and Amorah is. That's the location. So she turns into a pillar of salt as punishment for looking back at the destruction of Sodom when she shouldn't have done so. And that's the story, right? That's the story. It's part of the story of the parasha. So, what is this about? Like, what is this, idea of her turning into a pillar of salt? That's what caught my curiosity. Why did she turn into a pillar of salt? So there's a medrash, a few medrashim on it. So one medrash says that when the guests first came to Lot, so the pasuk says that Lot yas lehem mishta, that he made a feast for them, Umatzos offer, and he baked matzos as well. So it was also the same time as when they came to Avram as well. And the Medrash, one of the interpretations of the matzos, I mean, it says matzos, they made, you know, made leavened bread. So the Medrash says, one Medrash says it was Pesach, right? It was Pesach. And even though Pesach, the mitzvah Pesach hadn't been given yet, as we've said so many times before, that the different times of the year are always invested with the spirituality of those times of the year, even before the events took place. So even before the whole story of the Exodus from Egypt took place, the spirituality, the ruchnias, the spirituality and the kedusha of Pesach always existed from the beginning of time as well. And the uniqueness of the Avos and the Imos was that they were able to identify and tap into the spirituality of the times, the Kedusha of the times, the eternal Kedusha of the times. So even before the events of Pesach hadn't taken place, the Kedusha of Pesach was existent, was always extant. And therefore, they intuited to be able to make matzahs. And that's what, they made matzahs. That's what Avraham Avinu did. Also, Lot as well made matzahs. The Pasuk says matzahs. However, the Medrash says that the word matzos can also be vocalized as matzus, right? Remember, there's no vowels in the Torah. So it could either be vocalized as matzos, which is a typical reading of it, but it could also be vocalized as matzus, matzus. What's matzus? Matzu, matzah umariva. That's the singular word of it, matzah umariva, which means quarreling. Quarreling. So the Pasuk alludes to the fact that there was a fight. There was a quarrel taking place between who? Between Lot and his wife. Right? Lot's wife got into a quarrel with him. Medrash says that Matzus Gedola Omda Alemelach. Tremendous quarrel took place over salt. Over salt. They had a fight about salt. Some couples have fights over finances. Lot and his wife had a fight about salt. To have a amalah, because he told her, Lot said to his wife, "Have li lein asanya kalil melach." He said, "You know, bring a bit of salt, salt the food for them. We're making food for them. Put a bit of salt inside the food." And then she said to him, "You want to bring this terrible custom into Sodom, into this place? You want to bring this terrible custom of salting the food in Sodom? You know, I'm not going to allow you to do that." And that the whole fight came about because of the salt, right? That's one medrash. Another medrash later on says that it seems like, I mean, it doesn't say this exactly, but it seems like perhaps that this fight kind of boiled, even, you know, just got more embroiled because the medrash says that Reb Yitzchok said, Shechata b'melach, that she sinned with salt. Lot's wife sinned with salt. That night, when the angels came, when the guests came to Lot, what did she do? So she went to all of her neighbors, and she said to them, "I need salt. You know, my husband wants salt." I guess she acquiesced eventually, even though, you know, she objected to the fact that he wanted to put salt in the food. So she went around to the neighbors, and she said, "Do you have any salt? Tanili melach, give me salt for these guests." But really what she was doing was this, as the Medrash. Really, her intention was this. She wanted the neighbors and the people of Sodom to find out about the fact that Lot was welcoming guests. And that's why she needed the salt. She was asking for the salt, because then they'll recognize the fact that there's guests in their house. And then they'll come along and then they'll instigate trouble by coming to the house and objecting to the fact that there's guests there. So Lot's wife is not such a great lady over here. The truth is, she was born in, she was from Sodom herself, so she had these character traits of the midos of Sodom. But she instigated the trouble, and she gets, you know, she goes around telling everyone to bring salt, so that they realize that there's trouble, that there's guests happening in the house, and that's why Medrash says, and that's the reason why she turned into a pillar of salt, mida keneged mida, because she instigated all this trouble. With the salt, therefore, she was punished with salt. She became a pillar of salt. There's another medrash, which I saw quoted somewhere, that another thing that she did was that she put extra salt inside the food to make it taste really bad. And so, you know, to make it really work bad. So three medrashim about the terrible sin that Lot's wife commits with salt, and as a result of that, she's punished by being turned into a pillar of salt. So that's the Medrash, that's the Midrashim. So that at least explains technically, right? Technically, it explains why should she turn into a pillar of salt, because she sinned with salt, right? She sinned with salt. But it really, you know, it begs the question, like, what's going on? Like, what's the significance of salt? Why is this such a major part of the story? She turns into a pillar of salt. The Dead Sea area is now salt. What's going on over here? So I saw in a sefer, I have a sefer over here. It's called Meir Derech, and he discusses a very, very important discussion about the Gemara. Quotes a conversation between Rabbi Akiva and Antoninus Rufus, the famous villainous Roman. Antoninus Rufus said to Rabbi Akiva, he said, if Hashem loves everyone, and Hashem loves Aniyim, and he loves poor people as well, so why does he make poor people? Like, why would he put poor people in the world and cause them grief and despair of not having money? If he loves everyone, why are the poor people in the world? So Rabbi Akiva said back to him, he said, the reason is because to save us from Gehenna, to save us from hell, so that we now provide for the Aniyim, for the poor people, so it saves everyone else who has money and has the resources to be able to support the Aniyim, the poor people, so it saves everyone else, the wealthy, the people who have the means to be, and it saves them from Gehenna, from any kind of punishment in the next world. So that's the Gemara. But Rav Simcha Zisel of Kelm, the Sabra of Kelm, famous great Baal Musa, the previous generations, so he said, I don't understand. He says, Hashem could not have found another mitzvah to save us from Gehenna. I mean, it's one thing like for us to do mitzvahs to be saved from Gehenna, but why at the expense of the poor people? Why should they have to suffer at our expense? Why should they have to suffer? So he says, and he emphasizes this with tremendous import, and he says, because the reason is because the mitzvah of giving tzedakah is not just simply the act of giving tzedakah, but the mitzvah of giving tzedakah is in order to come to love the individual, to love the recipient, and reach a level of v'yahat l'recha kamocha. And it's impossible to do this without the mitzvah tzedakah. And the reason is because the mitzvah tzedakah is not simply the physical act of giving the money to the individual. If a person does not feel the tsar of the individual, or that the pain of that person, and doesn't feel a sense of benevolence and kindness in wanting to give that tzedakah, he hasn't fulfilled the mitzvah tzedakah properly. So it's a major part of the mitzvah tzedakah to feel the needs of the recipient. And not just to give it. To give it is good. But if you're giving it, just giving it out of obligation, as good as it is, it doesn't meet the proper shleimus of the mitzvah tzedakah. The shleimus of tzedakah requires a person to feel the needs of the recipient as well. He says, and the only way for a person to be able to truly reach a madrega of v'yahat l'recha kamocha, of loving your neighbor as yourself, you have to give with a tremendous sensitivity and a kindness and a joy as well. And giving that tzedakah with that sentiment, with that attitude, brings a person to that greater level of loving your neighbor as yourself. And that's what saves us from Gehenna. But the point is, what you learn from this is tzedakah, there are two levels of tzedakah. One is giving, and the other is feeling the needs of the recipient. It's interesting because someone came to our door last night. We have, you know, our neighborhood, people knock on the door. And, you know, it's easy just to kind of walk to the door and give them, you know, whatever, some money, $10, $20. And then they walk on, they go off to the next house. But if I really think about it, you know, it's important more than just giving it, but to give it with an interest, with a kindness, with a sensitivity, and asking the person, you know, what's going on, you know, what kind of trouble are you in? What are you collecting for? To try and muster up a feeling of kindness and benevolence in giving it as well, not just to be yotzei, just to fulfill the mitzvah of giving tzedakah. But he goes on to say over here, he says, this was the primary fault of Sodom. The primary fault of Sodom was not the fact that they weren't practicing Hachnasas Orchim. The primary fault of Sodom was the fact that they lacked this benevolence, this kindness, this, you know, this kind attitude, this joyful act of giving. And he proves it. He says, the Rabbeinu Yonah in Pirkei Avos, right? Pirkei Avos, it says, there's a very famous mission in Pirkei Avos that says, if someone says what's mine is mine and what's yours is yours, so some say that's called that's Midas Sodom. That's the trait of Sodom. So Rabbeinu Yonah writes on that, and he says, the Mishnah is not talking about people who are not giving. The Mishnah is talking about people who are giving tzedakah. However, if they're giving the tzedakah with the attitude of what's mine is mine, what's yours is yours, that's the Midah of Sodom. So how can you have that attitude if you're giving? The answer is because when you're giving the tzedakah, you could be feeling, okay, I'm doing it out of duty. I'm giving the tzedakah out of obligation. But really, in my heart, strictly speaking, I feel in my heart, what's mine is mine, what's yours is yours. Okay, what can I do? I have to give it to you anyway. I have to give it to you, so I'm giving it to you. But really, what's mine is mine, yours is yours, so I'm giving it to you anyway. So doing it in that way, that's a mid of Sodom. That's exactly the mid of Sodom. It's not a lack of giving, but it's a lack of benevolence and goodwill and kindness in giving the tzedakah. And he quotes over the Yavetz, he says, one of the famous commentaries, the Yavetz, he says, the antidote is by perpetually giving more and more and more. He says, what should a person do to distance himself from this trait? Yarba losses, a person should increase by giving. Give more and more and more. Ad shuv lo teva sheine, until his actions develop the feelings of benevolence. You know, that's one of the most important things. You don't learn these ideas through the brain. You don't learn these ideas by inspiration. You learn these ideas by doing. You know, that's the surefire way of changing our emotions, of changing our feelings and changing our attitudes. The fastest way, and maybe the most difficult way, but the fastest way is by putting into action, by simply doing, by regimenting yourself and doing it, going through the motions of the mitzvah. He says, doing it over and over again. He says, that's the way to do it. That's the way for a person to come to a benevolence of heart. The Pasuk says, Noson titein lo, perpetually give to him, perpetually give to him. For lo yera levavacha, so your heart doesn't become bittered by giving to him. Perpetually give to him. It says in Mishle, Matan Adam Yarchiv lo. A man's gift broadens his heart. The more you give, the heart broadens out. It becomes easier to give. It evokes the right emotions in the giving as well. But he says, this is the meat of Sodom. Sodom lacked this characteristic. Maybe they gave. Maybe they gave. They were helpful to different people. But they certainly lacked the benevolence, the kindness, the goodwill, the desire to want to give. So that's how they explain. That's how we explain the meat of Sodom. Let's go back to the salt. So what does salt have to do with this? If you think about it, it's very simple. Because salt, right, what does salt do? Salt enhances the food, right? You can make, you know, some meat, you can make some whatever particular dish, and the food is there, and the food provides the nourishment and the sustenance for the individual. But it doesn't taste so good. The salt brings out the taste. If I want to give food to you, if I want to help you, if you're hungry and you need food, I could just give you the food. The food is the nourishment. If I'm going to put salt on it, what am I doing by putting the salt on it? I want you to taste it. I want you to enjoy it. The salt symbolizes my desire to want to be benevolent and kind in giving to you. It's a very simple idea. That's what salt does. So the fact that Lot's wife was it was an anathema to her to have put salt on the food. Okay, you're going to give them food. You're going to take care of them. But to put salt on them, what kind of business is this? What's mine is mine. What's yours is yours. Why are you so concerned about them? Why do you want the food to taste good? And the answer is because that's truly what's the midah of chesed is, to want to make a person feel good in the receiving of that thing as well. Not just to be yotzei, to fulfill my obligation in giving. And that's why she was so opposed. She was fundamentally opposed to the idea of him putting salt on the food, because that symbolized them wanting to give and him wanting to give. She hated that. So therefore, don't put the salt on the food. And then she went around telling everyone, you know, I need some salt in order to accentuate this terrible, shameful thing that her husband was doing. And therefore, midah keneged midah, measure for measure, gets turned into a pillar of salt. So that is what happens. So it's interesting, very, very fascinating. So the Shulchan Aruch says, so we know we wash our hands for bread, right? We wash our hands. Al netilas yadayim, right? So we wash our hands for bread, and which is an obligation, which is a mitzvah, an obligation. But there's also a second washing at a meal as well, right? I'm sure some of you are familiar with this, right? The Shulchan Aruch writes that mayim achronim is a chova. The latter waters, literally, the waters at the end of the meal, water at the end of the meal is also an obligation. What is mayim achronim? So it's traditional, and we'll see in it shortly, it's even, according to many opinions, it's a halacha, that at the end of a meal of bread, you're supposed to wash your hands as well. You don't wash your hands with the full vessel twice on each hand. Just wash your fingers, your fingertips. But the Shulchan Aruch says, this mayim achronim is a chovah, is an obligation. And the Mishnah Berurah explains the reason why is because yadayim mezohamos, because the hands get dirty during the meal from the feet, from the food. And if the hands are dirty from the food, therefore you shouldn't really be making a bracha. You shouldn't make a bracha when your hands are dirty. So therefore you wash them off. And it's based upon, it's alluded to in the Pasuk. Pasuk says, Hiskadashtem v'yisim kadoshim. It says, you shall make yourselves sanctified and holy, and you'll be holy. So there's two expressions of making yourself holy. You shall make yourselves holy, and you shall be holy. So the Gemara says that the first expression of making yourselves holy alludes to the water, the washing at the beginning of the meal. And the second expression of making yourself holy alludes to the water at the end of the meal, the mayim achronim, which is the waters you wash with at the end of the meal. So it's alluded to. See, we have over here like two acts of washing. Washing at the beginning, washing at the end. But then he goes on, he says more than this. He says, even if you are very, very careful and you eat very, very politely and you eat with a knife and fork and there's no dirt on your fingers whatsoever, you still should wash your hands at the end of the meal as well. Why? Because gam kein chiyuv chazal, because the rabbi still nonetheless mandated washing their hands at the end of the meal because of the chashash, because of the concern of Melech Sodomis, because of sodomite salt. Sodomite salt? What is sodomite salt? The Bekol Suda Halanintza Melech, because in every meal, there is salt in every meal. V'yesh Lachosh, and there's a concern, maybe inside the salt, there's also sodomite salt as well. And sodomite salt is very dangerous. It has a very, very bad effect on a person. Sodomite salt can blind the person's eyes. Someone who touches the salt, puts the salt to his eyes, he could get blind, God forbid. And then, and even nowadays, Shein Motzi Melech Sodomis, we don't really have this sodomite salt among us today. Nonetheless, you still should be concerned about other very strong salt, which you put the salt in your eyes, it's going to affect your eyesight, it's going to affect your vision. So he's recommending you do it anyway. You wash your hands for two reasons. Again, one reason is because of the holiness of the beginning of the meal, holiness at the end of the meal, but also because of the sodomite salt concern as well, that the salt affects a person's vision. So then later on he says, many people, many poskim, you know, have basically disregarded this custom. He says, however, the Chofetz Chaim says, really, you shouldn't. You shouldn't disregard it. You should definitely do it anyway because the Gra, the Vilna Gaon, you know, it says you have to do it. It's an obligation. Others also say it's an obligation. And he also says the Mekubalim, the Kabbalists also say it's an obligation as well. Even in the absence of sodomite salt, you still should do it. So also Alpi Kabbalah, based upon Kabbalistic ideas as well. So I saw in the Sefer over here, one of my Svarim, he says that he suggests that maybe it all goes back to our story. Because what happened as a result of the salt in Sodom? What was the terrible catastrophe? I mean, it was a terrible catastrophe for them, but the terrible result of the salt in Sodom was these thugs became blind. They were blinded because as a result of the salt in Sodom, because his Lot's wife didn't want to put salt in the food and she went around getting salt from the neighbors around. So therefore they ended up getting blinded as well. So the whole message of the salt is think about and focus on the needs of another, not just by simply giving and fulfilling your obligation. Take it one, not just one step, 10 steps further to feel the needs of the recipient and give with a benevolent heart as well. And therefore, he suggests that the reason why we should still wash our hands at the end of the meal because of sodomite salt is that we should, as Yidden, we should remember and remember who we are, that our lives are not about ourselves. Our lives are about other people. Our lives are about serving Hashem and doing for others. And doing for others doesn't just mean to get by with the obligation, but it means inculcating myself with the feelings and the sensitivities of the needs of another person. And that's the message of washing your hands at the end of the meal, to be reminded of the sodomite salt, because they suffered. They suffered because of a failure of recognizing what salt is all about. It's all about enhancing something. And we have to enhance the lives of other people. That's our obligation.